Good morning, all.
Good morning.
Val was mentioning that you don't have a lead pastor, and so to just give you context to who I am, I'm a temp, okay? my wife is not with us today. She had cataract surgery this week, and she's doing great. She can see things more clearly than she has since childhood, and so she's thrilled. But she wasn't quite ready to be leaving the house yet. And unfortunately, when we come back in a couple of weeks, she's going to have a cataract surgery just before that one, too. So please don't think, I think there's something wrong with Todd and Chris, pray for them. I know how things can spread around. It's nothing like that, all right? We are in our, what I find to be, from my perspective, I love this study of the patriarchs. Patriarch today almost seems to have a negative connotation. You live in some kind of patriarchal society. But we're talking about the patriarchs. These are the original guys who are, when you think about it, our faith comes built on the shoulders of these men. And so today we're going to continue in that. And in a way, these are real heroes for us, aren't they? Imperfect heroes, but still heroes. And when you think about heroes, a lot of different pictures come to mind. When I was a little boy, I watched the original Superman, which looked, now looking back, it looks like a guy in his pajamas, with a cape. But I watched the original Superman on TV when it was in black and white. My kids wonder what it was like when we saw everything in black and white. But there are modern day heroes too. You probably can think of some yourself. One that comes to my mind is a guy named Pat Tillman. Pat Tillman was an NFL football player, very successful. He went to college in Arizona. He became a member of the football team, NFL football team from Phoenix, and was playing. He was having a great career. 9/11 happened, and he took a leave from football and joined the Army. Unfortunately, Pat lost his life while fighting after 9/11. And today is recognized, especially in Arizona, but nationally, as a man who made a great sacrifice, a great hero. Our minds think of others who died for us or who gave themselves up for us. And we also have personal heroes in our lives. Not ones that they've never been in the newspaper, nobody ever wrote a song about them or there's a special day for them, but there are personal heroes that we have. My parents are personal heroes to me, who made great sacrifices for my sister and me. They didn't have some things because they made sure we took piano lessons and trombone lessons and had horses or motorcycles that we could go riding with them in the woods, or that made sure that we had college paid for without debt. They did things, and they were not rich people. As I look back, I realize I think we were probably more on the poor side, but they made sure that we had what we needed and that we had such quality Christian upbringing. And for me, I look back and I think, boy, those are heroes in my life. You probably have heroes in your life as well, and those are often based on sacrifice. Sacrifice is something that we look at and we applaud. We say, because of others' sacrifice, I have benefited. That perspective on sacrifice is something today I want us to look at. What does sacrifice mean in our lives? And what would you consider to be a big sacrifice for you to make in your life? Sometimes we think, well, I'm going to do something sacrificial. Sometimes we shy away from doing something sacrificial. And sometimes we think of sacrifice as an event, as something that happens at a moment in time, where you jump out in front of the moving train to save somebody, or you give away something of real significance in somebody's life. But today I would like us to think of sacrifice not as a moment in time, but as a lifestyle. Sacrifice as how we live our lives because of the sacrifice that was made for us when God purchased us. So today we're going to look at sacrifice and one of the great patriarchs of our faith, Isaac. Now, when we think of this story, we rightly almost always focus on Abraham. And if you turn in your Bible to Genesis 22, we're also going to be in Romans chapter 12. So you find both those places in your Bible. And I like it, if you're using a physical Bible, have it because you can write in it. And if you're using, like the Bible app or something, highlight things. But in Genesis 22, we have this story that we know so well. It says, God said to Abraham, take your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, and go to the mountain, to the region of Moriah. Sacrifice him there as a burnt offering on the mountains I will tell you about. As I said, most of the time in this story, we focus on Abraham because, boy, the faith, the pain, and he's an archetype of God. We think of when we think of God sending his son and the sacrifice that God made, we think of Abraham as a type of that, an illustration of that. But today we're going to look at the other character in this story, Isaac, who became a willing sacrifice. You see, Isaac was not just a little tiny boy. Isaac was most likely a young adult. Josephus says that Isaac was 33 years old. Jewish tradition says he was at least 20. And there's other evidence that really helps us understand that Isaac was not just a little boy. For one thing, Abraham and Isaac went on a four-day trip through the wilderness, and Abraham would have been a very old man by this point, and Isaac would have been responsible to care for his aged father on this four-day journey. Additionally, they took supplies. They took a big load of wood, and the Bible talks about Isaac bearing that load and carrying things. He also had complete understanding of what a proper sacrifice should be, because he quizzes his dad on the way, hey, we've got wood, we've got fire, we don't have a sacrifice. So he understood things. So he wasn't just a little boy who was kind of blindly following along. He had he was physically and mentally a very mature person. And if you go on now to verse number 9, it says, when they reached the place that God had told Abraham about, Abraham built an altar there, arranged the wood on it, and he bound his son Isaac and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. Then he reached out his hand and took the knife to slay his son. But the angel of the Lord called out to him from heaven, Abraham, Abraham. Here I am, he replied. Do not lay a hand on the boy, he said. Do not do anything to him. Now I know that you fear God, because you have not withheld from me your son, your only son. But again, let's focus on Isaac for a moment. Isaac placed complete confidence in his father's actions. There's no screaming, Dad, are you out of your mind? There's no, I'm not climbing up on this altar. No, you're not going to tie my hands. No, you're not going to cover my face so that you can go ahead and plunge that knife into my chest. There's no record of Isaac being anything but completely pliable to what his father was telling him he was to do. Isaac is the amazing example of one who laid himself on the altar, one who gave himself willingly for his father's purposes. He trusted that Abraham had heard from God and that the outcome would be good. The story parallels Paul's teaching found in Romans chapter 12. So if you'll turn to the book of Romans, the 12th chapter, we're going to see what Paul said there as a command to us, starting in verse number 1, just two verses. Therefore, I urge you, brothers, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. This is your spiritual act of worship. Do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. Paul is calling every believer to follow in Isaac's footsteps. Isaac is not the amazing man who did what nobody else should ever have to do. Isaac is an example for all of us to follow. He calls us here, and there are several things here that we can look at. We're going to look at the why. We're going to look at the how. We're going to look at the outcome of what Paul tells us here. So even though we're talking about Isaac, we're going to spend most of our time learning from Paul. So first of all, why should we do this? Why should we give our lives to God as a sacrifice? Well, Paul says we do it, we lay our lives on the altar because of God's mercy. Because of God's mercy, we can lay ourselves on the altar. The Greek word for mercy here is eleos, which means great compassion. Because of God's incredible and great compassion for us, we respond to him by
putting ourselves on the altar. The quality that in God that moves him to deliver us from our sin, that's his mercy. It's his mercy. It's the motivation that causes us to say, you know, God has been so good to me, I must give him everything. Now, if you think about it, there's a real comparison here between believers in Christ and people who are unbelievers, or what the Bible might call the heathen. You see, heathen people or unsaved people, people who served and worshiped idols, they would, in order to get their God's mercy, they would make themselves a sacrifice, or they would make sacrifices. They would, as we saw some in the Old Testament, cut themselves and even give their children into fire to be burned, all to try to get mercy from their God. Yet because God has already showed us mercy, we give our lives as a sacrifice. The whole thing is turned on its side. Now, the second thing Paul talks about is how we do this. How do we make ourselves a sacrifice? He says we place our lives, or our bodies, as he says, on the altar. We give our bodies as living sacrifices. The concept of the body here is not just our physical body, but it speaks to all of our actions. What we have in our heart, we act out with our body, right? I make decisions in my mind. My will tells me what I'm going to do. I make decisions in my heart, and I act them out with my body. So Paul says, give your bodies, not just physically, but all of our actions, onto the altar that God has prepared for us. So we place that, and when we do that, it becomes a holy act, Paul says. Placing our lives on the altar is a holy act. It's an amazing expression of closeness and set up, and being set apart for God's purposes. Now, before ministering in the Old Testament, the priests of the Old Testament would consecrate themselves. They would go through rituals. They would go through washings. They would go through preparations to get themselves ready to give a sacrifice. They made themselves holy. And before we give our lives to God, or as we give our lives to God and we make ourselves a sacrifice, we are doing a holy act. It's a dedication to God. And the work of Jesus that we just celebrated through communion is that act that makes us holy. We don't go to a basin of water and go through a ritual, and we don't go through certain motions or say certain words. There are not even certain prayers we can pray that make us holy. It is the work of Christ, what he did on the cross, and his blood that makes us holy, so that we can be a sacrifice to God. Then Paul says it's a spiritual act of worship. We hear a lot about, we preach a lot about, we even are aware of how worship is much more than what Roger and our amazing team here leads us in. Worship starts way before their first chord, way before you whistle something. I've never been in church. I'm 68 years old. I've never whistled in church, Roger. Thank you for a new experience. Way before the first chord is played, way before the usher greets the first person through the door, we're already worshiping today. If we're in the right place with God, we're worshiping. When the last song is sung, we're still worshiping. As you're hearing the word right now, you're worshiping. When you go and have fellowship with somebody today for lunch, or you go home and you rest, we're worshiping. The more aware we are of God in our lives, the presence of God in our lives, his blessing in our lives, our relationship with him, we're worshiping through everything we do. But he says here specifically that one of our greatest acts of worship is giving ourselves to his purposes, his plan, his call on our life, his commands for us, laying ourselves on the altar. He says that is an act of worship. There are many different translations you see in the Bible, but one of the ones that I think is most significant is where it calls it not just spiritual worship, but a reasonable act of worship. And I've I've often thought, what does reasonable mean there? And I even went to the Amplified version of the Bible where it says this, and it helped me a lot. Amplified Bible says reasonable, and then in parentheses says rational and intelligent. So reasonable does not mean that my neighbor thinks that me living a Christian lifestyle is reasonable. It's not what others think. Like, if other people think the fact that I am faithful to my wife, they might say, that's unreasonable. You should have all the fun you want out in the world. Or people might say, you don't get drunk and you don't go to parties. That's not reasonable. It's not about what the world thinks is reasonable. Reasonable here means I have made a reasoned and intelligent decision that I am giving myself 100% to God's purposes. That's why it's reasonable. I reasoned it. I reckoned it in my heart and in my mind. And it is a decision, not based on emotion, based on fact. Based on I have decided that eternity is worth more than this world. When Isaac crawled up on that altar, I can guarantee you, Dad didn't have the strength to pick him up. My son's 40 years old. If I said, son, I want to put you in the pickup, let me grab you and lift you up, son, and put you in the pickup. There's no way I'm picking that guy up. He's as big as me. I can hardly get myself off the ground. Abraham had to say, son, get up on the altar. And Isaac made a reasoned decision. I trust my dad. I'll get on the altar. So when Paul says, make yourself a sacrifice to God, folks, we have come to a decision that I have put Christ before me, the world behind me, that I have counted the cost, and he's worth everything. As our brother said today, we have the pearl of great price in our lives, and that is worth my decisions in my life, and I will anchor my life based on those decisions. The animals of the Old Testament sacrifices, they did not make a reasoned decision to be a sacrifice. They're herded into a pen. They're probably even given the idea, this is going to be a great day. You know, here, have a little oats. But we make a reasoned choice. And today, I guess if I'm parking on an idea for a minute, I want to park on this. I hope today you make a reasoned decision that says, I will follow Christ on days it feels great, on days it feels hard, on days that it's raining, on days that I'm feeling depressed, on days that I have anxiety, on days that I'm rejoicing because the greatest news I've ever heard just came into my life. It doesn't make any difference. I'm following Jesus today. It's my reasoned choice. Now, this decision that Paul was leading people toward, Paul had great emotions about this. Because he starts this scripture by saying, in view of God's mercy, I urge you. I urge you. This Greek word for urge is parakaleo, or parakaleo, and it does not just, it means a forceful instruction. Is what it means. A forceful instruction. Now, there are some instructions that we can get that are not forceful. Like if I said to you, how do I get down to Kaleidoscope Pizza? And you said, oh, you just... And people do this to me all the time. They tell me how to go, and I say, I just want to use GPS because I don't understand Medford. I don't know where anything's going. I go down the hill, and then I don't know what happens. But if you gave me instructions, you want to go to the first stop sign, you're going to want to turn left, and you're going to come to this place where there used to be a tree, turn there. You know, those are not forceful instructions. But a few months ago in Eugene, one of our best hotels, the Valley River Hotel, had a fire. And a jogger was going on the jogging path outside there. It was early in the morning, and when he came to this unit, it's a two-story building, the balcony, flames were whipping out the patio door right up the roof. And a woman is standing on that patio, on that deck, screaming for help. Call the fire department. Call the fire department. And he yelled to her, "Jump to me." She said, "I'm afraid of the jump." But he saw the danger and he urged her, "Jump to me and live." She believed him and jumped into his arms. I'd like to say he caught her like on TV. They both went to the ground, you know. But she lived because he urged her. Paul is saying to us today, this is not just an idea. He's not saying, here's a concept that might work for you. This might enhance your life somehow. No, what he's doing is he said, jump. Jump into God. Jump into being a sacrifice. You've got to do this. It's not just an option. It's the path of life. I urge you to jump into his arms. Now, this issue that Paul brings up is actually a theme in the book of Romans. It's not just in Romans 12. Quickly, if you turn to Romans chapter 6, you'll see it occurs again in verse 13. Paul said, "Do not offer the parts of your body to sin as instrument of wickedness, but rather offer yourselves to God as those who have been brought from death to life, and offer the parts of your body to him as instruments of righteousness." He's saying our very body, every part of it is an instrument of righteousness. Offer it to God as a sacrifice. You've been brought from death to life, so it makes sense. Then in verse 19, just jump down a few verses, he brings it up again. He said, "Just as you used to offer the parts of your body to slavery, to impurity, and to ever-increasing wickedness, so now offer them in slavery to righteousness, leading to holiness." The old way we used to live was leading to ever-increasing wickedness. The way he has called us to live and the new path he's given us and this new life we're in leads to ever-increasing righteousness. Every day, growing. We used to spend our lives in useless choices. We used to end up with horrible outcomes because of that old life, those old choices. He says, "I'm urging you, make this choice to be a living sacrifice because it leads to holiness." Life on the altar leads to holiness. Now, just as Isaac offered himself to his father and to God, we are offering ourselves to God as living sacrifices. And let me give you a little illustration. Earlier, Val gave us an opportunity to give in an offering. And a monetary offering is a great illustration of how we can respond to what God is teaching us today from Romans 12. We have some possible choices that we can make when Val gave us this instruction. She says, "It's time to give." One of the things we can do is we can blow it off. Nope. Not giving. Just for whatever reason. I don't want to give. Other people can give for me. You don't know how hard it is for me to give. You don't know my bills. So no, I'm not going to give. Another choice is that we could give, but we could give so that others would see. Now, in the old days, we used to pass the plate. So you could really work that one up if you wanted to, you know. You could, excuse me while I get out my money. You know, you could really make sure people around saw you giving. Well, nowadays, you know, we give with the click of a mouse. We give by pointing at the app. We give by going back to the giving stations. And, I mean, good night, there's a zillion ways to give. You can even mail it in. I didn't know they still did mail. Anywhere, you know. But think about it. You could still misuse giving. You could make a show. You could take a selfie of yourself while you're putting it in the box. Then you post it on social media, #blessed. #life on the altar. You could do all that, but boy, there'd be no spiritual gain in that. You could also act in partial obedience. And this is a really insidious one for us, both in giving money and in giving our lives. We can say, 10%, God, you're really going high there, you know. I know churches where they're only going 4. So, you know, let's settle on 5 and call it good. Partial obedience. By the way, through our whole lives, both my wife and I have always given faithfully above tithes. We've always been very careful. And you know what? I've never had one day in my life where I didn't have a paycheck. I've never had one day in my life where I called a creditor and said, you won't be getting your money on time. I've never had one day in my life where God wasn't caring for us. And I'm just, that's an aside, okay? But 100% commitment always pays. But we do the same thing sometimes with God when it comes to laying our life on the altar. Well, God, I know you've got some pretty big ideas for my life and some things you'd like for me. You'd like me to be a living sacrifice. How about we go part-time sacrifice? Maybe we can ease into sacrificing. I mean, that would be about as ridiculous as Isaac saying to his dad, all right, Dad, let's do this. Cut off my ring finger. I will go through life without a ring finger gladly rather than a knife to the heart. You see, partial sacrifices aren't sacrifices at all. Paul said, I'm urging you, jump. Become a living sacrifice. You may have heard this news, and I don't mean to be the bearer of bad news. Sometimes these things get overlooked, but I think it's an important part of our national discourse right now. But the guy who wrote The Hokey Pokey, Roland LaPrise, recently died. How many were aware? See, this is sad. It was a really difficult time for his family, especially at the funeral, because they put him in the casket, they put his right arm in. Well, you know what it's all about. I bring this up not because it's a good joke, because it is a good joke. But the last verse of the Hokey Pokey says this, you put your whole self in, and then you shake it all about. You put your whole self in. You know, God is just calling us to put our whole selves in. To say, listen, in Malachi, when it comes to offerings, God says, test me and see if I don't bless you. You know what God would say if we could add a little postscript to Romans 12, 1 and 2? He'd say, test me and see if this isn't just the right thing. Test me. Becoming a living sacrifice always pays. General William Booth, the founder of the Salvation Army, was interviewed once and asked the secret of God using him in such an effective way. Here's his answer. Other people have greater minds, more talent, and greater resources, but God has gotten all there is of me. Wow. A guy who admits he doesn't have all the talents, all the resources, all the ideas, but he says, but God has got all of me. Literally changed his world. What happens when God gets all of you? Have you thought about it? What would happen if God had all of you? What would happen if he had all of us as a congregation? What would happen if he had all of us? See, life on the altar that we're talking about today confronts something that's going on in modern Christianity, which allows us to look deeply and sincerely committed to God when we're in church or when we're at church events, but when we're in the world, we live as the world. And that is not life on the altar. Somebody once asked James Pike if they could worship anywhere. And James Pike says, yes, you can worship anywhere, but the question is, do you? Do you? So how do you put yourself on the altar? How do you do what Isaac did, climb up that altar? Paul said, in part, from Romans 12:2, he said, be transformed by the renewing of your mind. He said this whole issue starts, we're doing it with our body, but it starts in our mind. Be transformed in the renewing of your mind. He's saying you got to break the pattern of this world. This world has a mold it's trying to squeeze you into, and there is a new direction for us to go. And he said, you've lived long enough in that pattern. And I've done some reading about what neurologists and people that know about neuropsychology and things have told us about how our minds work. And it goes like this. As we think a thought and take an action, it creates a path. When we repeat that again, the path gets deeper. And if you could think of a physical model of this, there is in your brain grooves that you're cutting by repeated actions so that we begin to do things without even much thought. For instance, how many of you drove here today and you didn't even really have to think about it much because you've done it so often before, and you can't remember other cars you saw, pedestrians you saw, deer you hit. There's nothing that... You didn't take your concentration because it's a groove in your mind. How many of you, if you can type at a keyboard, you have to think, A, B, B, D, D, you know? No, you just see it. I can type faster than I can talk because I've created a groove in my mind for it. How many of you slide into a gossipy conversation faster than you can even think about it? Because you started that thought process, and it's now an easy one to fall into. It's the mind of the world. We can have all kinds of these processes that keep us from the altar. When we get angry, we just snap at somebody. When we're upset, we grab a donut. I've had a few. When somebody says something mean to us, we just strike back. When there's a picture, a sexy picture on the computer that suddenly pops up and it's an option to click on it, we click on it before we thought a moment because it's what we've done in the past. So what does Paul say? Don't keep doing those things. Instead, be transformed in your mind. Where you literally saying, Lord, if I'm going to be on the altar... the altar mentally, so I'm going to need some new thought process. And God says, great, first thing we're going to do is we're going to spackle up your mind. We're going to fill in the grooves. We're going to transform your mind. And we're going to start creating some new responses that are automatic. That when reviled, I love. That when I'm tempted, I turn to God. That when somebody says something bad about me, I say something good about them. That I start putting God first. When somebody says, hey, buddy, have you got an extra dollar? Instead of brushing him off and saying, man, I hate that homeless group coming around here, saying, you know what? I have more than a dollar. I've got enough for a cup of coffee for both of us. Have you thought about getting some new thought patterns? And when we get these new thought patterns, get the renewed mind, getting on the altar does not become an impossible leap. We work out from our minds into our bodies. We no longer conform to those old thoughts. God promises us something amazing here. Transformation. Transformation. Transformer electrically changes power from one kind of power to another. Transformation changes our old life into something new. The Word of God embedded in our minds becomes that thing that forms our thoughts. In Colossians 3:16, the Bible says, let the word of Christ dwell in you richly as you teach and admonish one another with all wisdom, as you sing psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs with gratitude in your hearts. Look what he's saying to feed our mind. That's how we stay on the altar. Armed with transformation, you're on the path to sacrificial living. The word sacrifice comes from a Latin word, two words actually that have been pushed together. The first word is sacra, which means to set aside. And pharse means to make something. So the Bible here, or this word sacrifice that we use, means to set something aside to make something great. God says, set yourself aside. I'm going to make something great out of your life. And there are blessings that come. It's not just a cost, but the blessing side of this is great because Back to verse 2, it says, you'll be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, perfect, and pleasing will. So this is not just about making right decisions. I need to know God's will so I can make right decisions. No, it's that you are conforming to his plan. A few years ago, up at our church in Springfield, we hired an architect, and we said, we want to remodel the building. We spent $1.5 million remodeling and doing some stuff to the building, pushing out walls, adding on things, modernizing. We did all these things. And this architect made up the plans, but he just didn't hand us the plans and say, now, good luck. Actually, what he did was he would come and he would meet with the builder, sit down at a table every week, look at the plans, and then walk the building and look at everything that had been done. And if it wasn't as he specified, he said, that's not what I specified. Or this is what I said to do. Let's do it this way. Here's the materials we're supposed to use. And so this word that talks about testing and approving God's will, actually, this is what it refers to. Conforming to the architect's plans. So it's not just that if I make myself a sacrifice, God will show me who I'm supposed to marry. Or if I make myself a sacrifice, I'll know if I should take this job or not. Of course it involves those things, but they're not the big picture. God has, as an architect, a plan for your life. And when you are on the altar, the architect is working with you to make sure that every day, every decision, every part that you're building in your life conforms to the wonderful plan he's made for you. And the outcome is good. It's good. One of the attributes of God is that he is good, and one of the things he does is he brings about good in our lives. Good means it's beneficial. It's not just taking up space. It's not just something that you did in your life. Good means it's morally honorable. Good means it has proven value. So the outcome of your life, when you live your life on the altar, is good. It's good. The opportunity for you to live on the altar is yours. It's a good path with an assured outcome. There's a space on the back of your bulletin, and it's just got a big square. Take a look back there. This is an important part of our day. And it says at the top, God's plan for me. And then it's got a big empty space, and then it says, Lord, please fill in the above as you will. I don't know how many of you would sign a contract with a person this way. No, I'd like to buy this property. I'll just sign at the bottom, and you, Mr. Seller, can write anything you want. We wouldn't do that because we'd say, well, people aren't trustworthy. But we can do this with our God. To take our lives and say, here is my signature, dated today, August the 13th, 2023. God, here is my life. I'm going on the altar, so I just want you to fill it in as you direct. You are at a crossroads of a great opportunity today for your life. That going forward, you would say, you know what really changed in my life was that day I gave God full control and put myself on the altar. Please do not miss this opportunity. Queen Mary of England was loved by her people, and she would often take walks out into the countryside. She'd take transportation out into the far away places from London, and she would just walk in the countryside. She would gather children around her and take walks, hold hands with them and talk with them, ask them about their lives and about what their parents were doing, and just enjoy time with the kids. And one day she was doing that. She was walked far away from her carriage. And then to her surprise, it got really cloudy and it looked like rain was impending. And she thought, uh-oh, this is going to be bad. So she knocked on the house, a door of a house, a little cottage that was there, and she had outwalked her security detail. There was nobody with her but her and the kids. She knocked on the door, and she said to the lady who came to the door, she says, may I please ask you a favor? She says, I was out for a walk. I got far away from where I was going, you know, where I should have been, and it looks like it's going to rain. Could I borrow an umbrella from you? The lady looked at this lady at the door wanting an umbrella, and she thought, I have two umbrellas. One is really nice. And one is one I could probably part with, and if it never came back, it's no big deal. It's kind of broken and tattered. You know how umbrellas get. They've gone the wrong direction. They're bent and everything. So she gives her one that looks like something out of, something out of the trash. Hands it to her. There you go. Queen Mary thanks her. A day later, a man in royal garb comes. He's the queen's escort. He bows slightly to the lady at the door and says, "The queen thanks you for the use of your umbrella." She, with trembling hands, she took it and thanked the man and shut the door and then began to cry, "I did not give my best to the queen." She could have had a life where she said, "I gave the queen my best." Someday we'll get to heaven. We'll ask ourselves the question, if the worship team can come, we'll ask ourselves the question, did I give my best to God? Oh, I hope you can say with me today, yes. I held nothing back. I crawled up on the altar because the outcome will be good. I'd like you to take that piece of paper that I just spoke about. This is our altar call today. Would you prayerfully think about the ramifications of signing that contract? God, fill in the top. Because I'll tell you what, he never looks at a covenant or a contract and says, "Oh, that's no big deal." He will answer on this. He will answer. Would you pray with me? Father, Isaac showed us something amazing. When he trusted Abraham, got up on that altar and said, "My life is in your hands." And because of his decision, the line of Israel went forward. Because of his decision, we have today the blessings of God. Our lives are made up of many such decisions. Today, there might be specifics that people are thinking of. I've got to put my life on the altar when it comes to my education, when it comes to my family, when it comes to my relationships. I'm going to put my life on the altar when it comes to my money. I'm going to put my life on the altar when it comes to the use of my time. I'm leaving it blank for you, God. I'm just saying, here it is. And just like Isaac, boy, that's kind of a scary thought. But just like Isaac, the outcome, I trust you, will be good. Thank you.